In favor, by aye?
Aye.
Opposed? None? Okay, the motion passes. Want to ask a quick question. We have been underway about an hour. Do you want to continue to go on now? You want to take a break? What's the pleasure of the commission? Keep moving? Okay, I hear keep moving. Just keep on moving then. Okay, the next item is item number 5. I'm going to call on staff, first of all, to kind of give us, Colleen or Mike, however you want to do this, to give us a little bit of input on this first time. My question here that I want of staff on this item is that under the governor's order, and legally, if you found out from your AG's office, we can go ahead and go forward with this particular item. Everything's okay with this item also. It's been something we can do. It doesn't fly in the face of the order of the governor, and doesn't fly in the face of anything we can't do. I'm looking at some of the responses we had before the meeting, some of the comments. I want to make sure we're clear to keep going so we're not spinning our wheels.
Colleen Cripps for the record. This actual petition, to my knowledge, has not gone through the governor's process. So I think there is, yeah, Rosemary, if you want to.
This is preliminary. I mean, the governor's orders deal specifically with regulations. This is to ask the commission to begin the rulemaking process. So if this commission were to say, yes, you should begin the rulemaking process, then NDEP would have to go through that process, hold public workshops, and the governor's office would be involved at that point. I don't think the governor's office needs to be involved at this point.
Okay. Good. That's what I wanted to know. Okay. So we'll bring the petitioner to the podium, please.
Chairman Gans, commissioners, again, Dan Galpern. I'm an attorney with the Western Environmental Law Center, and I am here now representing the petitioner, Kids versus Global Warming. Kids versus Global Warming was founded by Alec Lors. He's a 15-year-old sophomore at El Camino High School in Ventura, California. He's a kid who is extraordinary in his determination to tackle a problem that was created by, and should by right be fixed, by older persons. His group is dedicated to, and I quote, creating opportunities for youth to learn about the science of and solutions to climate change, and then to take action to reduce dependence on fossil fuels, and to influence the ruling generation to make good decisions now. The group is assisted in this petition by Our Children's Trust. This is a small group of, as they describe themselves, mothers, fathers, grandparents, aunts, uncles, teachers, who are consciously part of the ruling generation and whose mission statement asks about our children and grandchildren, will they ask us, why did you stand by and do nothing as the ice melted, as the wildfires burned? Or will they thank us for safeguarding their planetary inheritance? Our Children's Trust forwarded to you a PowerPoint covering the critical points of the petition. Was that circulated, John? Mm-hmm. Thank you. For reasons of brevity, I will not use it, but I will ask that it be made part of this record. The petition asks you simply and exclusively to undertake a rulemaking process, as Rosemary indicated, to craft and adopt a plan to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in Nevada. That plan needs to be sufficient to meet the goals of sustainability and to preserve the public trust, such that if similar plans were promulgated and adopted by other jurisdictions in the United States and internationally, that in concert, they would allow the climate system on which we depend to be restored. Unless that is done, essential biological and hydrological services that are essential to civilization and nature alike will be fundamentally disrupted according to the scientists, perhaps irretrievably. Restoration of the climate system requires stabilizing concentrations of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere at roughly 350 parts per million. We're now at 390 parts per million. To do that, emissions in this state and elsewhere, in the developed world at least, must be systematically reduced by approximately 6% annually. Doing this in conjunction with improved forestry, sustainable agricultural practices, adoption of efficiency measures, and wider adoption of renewable technology that is within our present reach could in fact enable us still, at this late stage, to restore the climate system that has enabled civilization to develop over the last 10,000 years. But in the alternative, failure to act with speed and intelligence will result in catastrophe, including accelerating global heating, increasing drought, increasing extreme weather events driven by increased atmospheric moisture content, sea level rise unsurpassed in the last 800,000 years, and widespread agricultural failures. On the nature of these consequences, if not their timing, the majority of climate scientists, including those at the US EPA, at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and at NASA, for example, are virtually certain. Failure to heed their warnings through responsible policy innovation would constitute, in our view, an unjust usurpation of the right of our children and their progeny to a habitable environment. It is now nearly 4 years since the 130-nation member Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change issued its fourth comprehensive assessment report, which, among other things, warned that up to 70% of species could be rendered extinct by the middle of the century if continued emissions raise temperatures by approximately an additional 3.5 degrees centigrade. At the time, the head of the IPCC stated that, quote, if there's no action before 2012, that's too late. What we do in the next 2 to 3 years will determine our future. This is the defining moment, end quote. Eminent climate scientists now warn increasingly of the potential for amplifying feedbacks if emissions continue unabated. These are anticipated to produce runaway global heating beyond human influence as permanently lost snowpack and sea ice accelerate the melting of permafrost and yield, consequently, the release of long-stored large quantities of methane, whose climate-forcing potential dwarfs that of CO2 on a molecular basis. Your authority to undertake strong action now rests in part on the moral claims of future generations. This point is well underscored by a Native American proverb: we do not inherit the earth from our ancestors, we borrow it from our children. That point as well animates a paper that is jointly authored by noted climate scientists in the United States, England, France, and Australia, and which is appended to the kids' petition in front of you. I ask that the scientist's paper, too, be made part of this record. Their paper has a ponderous title: The Case for Young People and Nature, A Path to a Healthy, Natural, Prosperous Future. It outlines, among other things, 7 categories of consequences threatening human health if we fail to act responsibly and strongly now: heat waves, asthma and allergies, infectious disease spread, pests and disease spread across taxa, forests, crops, marine life, winter weather anomalies, drought, food insecurity. And it ends with these words: the basic matter, however, is not one of economics. It is a matter of morality, a matter of intergenerational justice. The blame, if we fail to stand up and demand a change of course, will fall on us, the current generation of adults. Our parents honestly did not know that their actions could harm future generations. We, the current generation, could only pretend that we did not know. But beyond the moral claims, of course, there's the question of your legal authority and duty. The petition notes that the atmosphere, whose preservation and restoration is essential to nature and humanity alike, is an asset that belongs to all people, and that the state of Nevada, through the State Environmental Commission, holds this natural resource in trust for both present and future generations. The atmosphere, in sum, is one of the most crucial assets in our public trust. That public trust imposes a legal obligation on the state of Nevada, as with other states, to affirmatively preserve and protect the interest of trust beneficiaries, be they present or future, in an atmosphere whose composition produces an overall energy balance that provides for a habitable climate system roughly similar to that which has enabled civilization to develop and prosper over the last 10,000 years. The obligations discussed in the petition, deriving from the public trust doctrine, in fact do not conflict with the State Environmental Commission's basic statutory duties. I think, in fact, they are fully consistent with the SEC's authority, at least, under NRS 445B.205 to, quote, take all action necessary or appropriate to secure to this state the benefits of the Federal Clean Air Act. The Clean Air Act, in turn, recognizes that states retain authority to adopt or enforce, one, any standard or limitation respecting emissions of air pollutants, or two, any requirement respecting control or abatement of air pollution, as long as these are not less stringent than federal law. So the Federal Clean Air Act sets the minimum floor, but states can do more, and Congress anticipated that states would do more. In sum, then, in closing, 4 points. One, as the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change observed in 2007, quote, warming of the climate system is unequivocal and driven by emissions of greenhouse gas pollution. And as the EPA observed just 2 years ago, quote, climate change is upon us as a result of greenhouse gas emissions. Climate change is already occurring that harms our health and welfare, and the effects will only worsen over time in the absence of regulatory action. Two, the youth, who I'm here representing today, and future generations have a profound interest in ensuring that the climate remains stable enough to ensure their right to a livable future. And Nevada state government has a fiduciary trust obligation to them to act now. Three, to protect Earth's climate, we need to restore the energy balance in the climate system at a level that is optimal for nature and humanity alike. That requires an actual reduction in atmospheric concentrations of CO2 to approximately 350 parts per million, the level about 2 decades ago. This should protect Earth's natural systems by limiting average global temperature increases to no more than an additional 1 degree Celsius increase this century. To reduce atmospheric CO2 concentrations down to the 350 parts per million level, CO2 emissions must peak in 2012 and then decline at an average rate of 6% per year to result in roughly zero carbon emissions by 2050. We'll never get to exactly zero, but we can get close. Fourth and finally, the petition outlines a range of potential actions that can be taken. But importantly, this request to you is not to adopt any particular action or set of actions. Rather, it is to request that you devise and implement an enforceable, effective plan without delay, a plan that will be sufficient to ensure that the state is achieving its measure of proportional responsibility to ensure climate sustainability. And, of course, as you will have read, to require regular accounting and reporting to the legislature to assess success or not in achieving the goals of that plan. Thank you.
Questions from the commission? You did the same kind of job Mike Elkis does. Either snow us or we don't know what you're talking about.
I apologize for that, if that is the case. But first of all, I don't believe you. But secondly, if it's that true, please ask me questions.
Okay, I don't see any questions now, but I'm sure there will be.
Okay, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to open up this subject to the audience. I have a few requests here to comment on this. I do want to caution everyone that comes up that I will be a little bit heady about redundancy and going back over the same point. So if I think that's what you're doing when you comment, I will say something. Don't take offense to that. We're just trying to keep this meeting on schedule and move along. So with that in mind, there's no particular order, but I have a Mr. Kruger. Is that correct? From the Nevada Petroleum Association.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, Peter Kruger, representing Nevada Petroleum Marketers Association. And I guess it's good to be first because there will be no redundancy. I'm here on behalf of my clients who, again, restating, are men and women who retail and wholesale petroleum products in the state. And our real comment is that the petitioner, when asked as part of the petition process, what's this going to cost, or what are the financial implications to society, aren't able to provide and even admitted that it is a very difficult and if not impossible task to make an assertion to that point, number one. And we feel that for the commission to go forward with authorizing regulations, these are known numbers, or these numbers need to be known before such action. The other question I'd like to address is that the proponent talked about ART Nevada's, I'm assuming, proportional responsibility to reduce greenhouse gases 350 million or 350 parts per million, or tons or whatever it is, the address. But my question to him is, or to the petition is, how can Nevada as an island have a proportional share in the sense that what goes on, as we know, in the case of transportability from the west primarily, take the Grand Canyon transportability study, we are in so many cases a flyover state where, in the case of air emissions, we have very little control over. We talked earlier in this meeting about fugitive dust and those kinds of particular pollutants that contribute to our general degradation of our quality. But again, my point is that I believe this is the commission just adopted a proposal on greenhouse gases to go forward. The federal government is actively involved in this. Our neighbors to the west are struggling with this process as we speak and trying to come up with a process that works for them. And therefore, we urge that the commission at this time take no action to go forward with regulatory hearings or workshops because this is such an unknown factor. There are so many unknowns that for us to do this, to spend the time, the effort, and the energy will contribute nothing in our estimation to reduction of greenhouse gases. Thank you.
Questions? Thank you. We have a Doug Busselman.
Mr. Chairman,
state your name and
members of the commission, for the record, my name is Doug Busselman. I'm the Executive Vice President of Nevada Farm Bureau. We urge you to deny the proposed petition and the idea of pursuing a regulation of this type within Nevada. Although the supporters of the theory of man-caused climate change would like to have government actions on the basis of consensus of a group who would like us to believe that the science is now only that we're obligated to follow because it's they said it so. There is nothing from our point of view that establishes a scientific basis for further regulatory imposition. The state-by-state approach of pursuing regulation controls, as this petition is an example of, makes for a great publicity stunt, but fails to meet the test of sound public policy or effective solution-oriented regulation. We disagree with the approach of regulation for the purpose of enacting a political agenda dedicated to further destruction of our economic viability and opportunities. In closing, we urge this commission to reject the petition presented to you and move forward with the legitimate activities, such as the prior action that you took on the regulation that you dealt with then, and let Nevada government agencies work on the things that they can make a difference on.
Questions, Speaker? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Also have a card here for Alan Biaggi.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Commission members. My name is Alan Biaggi. Today I'm before you representing the Nevada Mining Association. And just very briefly, the association represents companies statewide, about 300 members, both large and small, vendors, exploration, and many of those are engaged in alternative energy proposals. The petition before you today, Kids versus Global Warming, requests you to direct the Division of Environmental Protection to begin rulemaking to reduce greenhouse gas emissions within Nevada over a specified time period. And while the reductions of GHGs is a very laudable goal, I think that there are a number of avenues where this petition fails. To begin, I don't believe either this body nor the Division of Environmental Protection has the statutory authority to undertake the development of greenhouse gas controls as envisioned by the petition. As we all know, a basic tenet of governance in Nevada is that the executive agency regulatory bodies have only the powers granted to them by the Nevada legislature through the Nevada Revised Statutes. Authority is not currently present in state law for the SEC or the NDEP to undertake a wide-reaching program for GHG reductions. Such major policy decisions are reserved for the Nevada legislature, where they can be fully vetted and considered while ensuring they are best interests of the state of Nevada and its associated citizens. Second, the petitioners are using the public trust doctrine as the basis for GHG reductions in Nevada. The public trust doctrine is a very complex and little used portion of law in the state of Nevada. The public trust doctrine has been primarily used in Nevada related to water quality and the relationship of public lands and not with air quality. Furthermore, like other states, the public trust doctrine in Nevada has not been litigated to any significant degree or defined by the courts. In fact, just 1 year ago, a major public trust case went to the Nevada Supreme Court concerning the Colorado River in Laughlin. To date, that case has yet to be decided. The petitioners are asking the SEC to move forward with regulatory rulemaking using obscure and relatively undefined common law. The public trust doctrine should not be used as a surrogate for specific legislative authority. Third, the public petition submitted by Kids versus Global Warming is lacking in the specificity and detail for this body to make a decision as to the impacts of the regulations. Mr. Krueger referenced this, that in the petition process, through your rules and requirements, the petitioner must ask what the implications and costs of the regulations are. The petition is definitely lacking in this regard. In fact, they punt that off saying, we don't know what this program will look like, therefore we can't determine the costs. With that said, however, the petitioners are asking for a 6% per year reduction in GHGs in the state of Nevada. So there is at least some basis where some cost estimates could be made, and yet the petitioner failed to make those costs. Similarly, the costs are not provided for the DEP to implement this program. There again is a very significant issue. The state of Nevada, as we all know, is in a very delicate state right now. The cost of these regulations are likely to be quite high. And interestingly enough, DEP no longer receives any general fund support. So this is likely, again, to change the complexion of the regulatory requirements and the cost for NDEP. Finally, the petitioner fails to identify overlapping state requirements. We heard today that there are requirements in the state of Nevada for GHG tracking, some elements of permitting, and for reporting. Yet the petition fails to identify those specific provisions in either state or in federal law. Finally, and probably most importantly, it's important to recognize that Nevada has acknowledged its need to address climate change. In 2007, then-Governor Jim Gibbons convened the Nevada Climate Change Advisory Committee to evaluate the impacts of climate change in Nevada and develop specific scientific recommendations to address it. The committee was composed of a diverse group of citizen members, representatives from the conservation community, state government, and business and industry. The committee and its subcommittee held 28 public meetings and considered extensive public comment and developed a number of recommendations specific to Nevada in our unique environmental and economic conditions. The commission recognized that while addressing climate change is important, it must be considered in the context of our social and our economic well-being. The aspect of balance of the economy and the environment has only become more important with Nevada's economic downturn over the last 3 years. The committee's final report outlined a number of great strides Nevada has taken to address climate change. Some of those strides included the requirement for an aggressive renewable portfolio in our in-state energy generation, the construction and operation of new solar, geothermal, and wind power projects in many areas of the state. And in fact, just today, a new project in Spring Valley was begun using wind energy. And finally, the strides made in the demand side of the energy equation using building and appliance standards and the use of alternative fuels. The report also outlined Nevada's rapid growth through the 1970s, 1980s, 1990s, and in the early 2000s in our unique situation where our large portion of our in-generation power generation is exported out of the state to our neighbors, primarily into California. Recommendations in the report, I believe, were well thought out and considered both in terms of the environment and the economy, and included issues of power plant siting, greenhouse gas intensity reductions on a megawatt hour basis, the need for an improved energy transmission network, and streamlined renewable permitting. And the thing I'd like to leave you with today is perhaps the most important statement in the report, which I quote, "Traditional static GHG reduction methods are not necessary and will not work for Nevada, and that if such target measures were implemented, they may severely limit the economic growth potential of this state." Many of the recommendations of this committee are in direct conflict with the petition before you today. I strongly believe the commission should review the full body of that document before deciding on the merits of this petition. Mr. Chairman and commission members, climate change is the environmental issue of our time. And what can be done about it is something that must be carefully considered nationally and in Nevada as an overall strategy and public policy matter with implications to our economy. Nevada is a unique state, and we require unique solutions to our problems. The petition before you today is an attempt to fit Nevada into a regulatory box with 49 other states with a policy that is ill-defined, grounded in questionable legal basis, inconsistent with our unique demographics, natural environment, and economy, and unworkable for our state. Finally, as I was sitting in the audience this afternoon, I was playing with my BlackBerry, and I couldn't help but notice that the similar petition, the companion petition in the state of Montana, has been rejected by their Supreme Court. That occurred just yesterday. The basis of it, and I couldn't read the whole thing, but the gist of it was scientific credibility using legally competent evidence is necessary in order to move forward with a petition such as this. So with that, I thank you for your indulgence in listening to me today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Questions from the commission?
Mr. Biagi, just on the Montana case, so do you know what route it went through to get to the Supreme Court of Montana? I mean, how it was presented and worked its way up, or do you know?
Mr. King, I don't. I was on my BlackBerry, and it popped up. It appeared that there was some action by a lower court, but I don't know the fact pattern and how it got there. Thank you.
Questions? Thank you, Mr. Biagi. Yeah, I also have a request from Mr. Tom Woodruff.
Thank you, Chairman. Mr. Biagi did an outstanding job stealing my entire speech. So,
but you won't be redundant.
I will not. Since I am a man of my word, and I tend to listen to my regulators and chairman, I'll just take this opportunity to say that we also, we appreciate the opportunity to stand here before you and provide comments on behalf of NV Energy. And for the record, my name is Tom Woodworth, legal counsel, environmental counsel with the company. As the parent company of the two largest electric utilities in Nevada, we obviously and strongly believe, as I think probably everybody here does, that any opportunity to advance children's health has to be considered with the utmost seriousness and pursued to the fullest extent practicable. Nevertheless, we would respectfully submit that the subject petition be dismissed without further proceedings. I think, by and large, the reasoning is I think there is a lack of legal authority for this, as been mentioned many times. I think a regulatory agency acts pursuant to its statutory authority, and we don't believe the statutory authority exists in this case. Furthermore, this is a highly politicized area that's been subject to a lot of national debate, and I think that process should be allowed to run its full course. And just, again, with the public trust doctrine, we believe your legal analysis will obviously prime mine, but our belief is that that is a doctrine that is rarely used and certainly not utilized in a situation like this. There's no precedent to utilize it in the fashion that these petitioners have sought nationwide. I won't go through my remarks other than to speak to what has happened in the state of Nevada and that NV Energy has been a part of that relates to reducing the carbon footprint of the state of Nevada and what we continue to do. So NV Energy is the leader in this state for the promotion of fossil-free, zero-carbon, renewable energy technologies. We procure power from renewable energy developers. We are developing our own wind, solar, and waste heat recovery projects. I believe one of the past speakers mentioned the Spring Valley Wind Project. We are the purchasers of that power, which is will be the first wind project developed in the state. We will procure that power. Further, we have partnered with a developer to construct the first ever high voltage transmission intertie that will connect the two primary load centers in Nevada, this area, Reno, and in Las Vegas. Right now, not to bore you with electrical terminology, but our systems are not directly interconnected. We have two utilities, and they do not interconnect electrically. That causes problems in that there are a lot of renewable energy resources up north that can't necessarily be utilized for the smaller load in this area. It would be great to be able to move that power to the south where there's much more need for the power, but we don't have the intertie to do it. We just recently partnered with a developer to start building that 500 kV intertie. Once that's developed by the end of next year, hopefully, then we will be able to better exploit the resources up north, be able to bring them down south, and vice versa, the solar energies in the south, bring them up north. So the state's renewable energy projects will continue to expand and become part of our energy resource mix. And as we do that, our state's contribution to climate change as a result of power production will continue to decline. NV Energy is among the nation's leaders in the recent development of modern, efficient natural gas generating plants, which emit approximately half of the carbon dioxide of coal plants. A full two-thirds of our company's generating capacity comes from gas power generation. I note that because that's a significantly higher proportion of gas-fired generation than the national average, which is about a quarter. So two-thirds of our generating capacity being gas, which emits half of the carbon dioxide of coal. Coal nationally, don't quote me on this, I think it's about 40 to 50% of our national generating capacity is through coal. But in the state of Nevada, that's about a quarter. So anyway, I said I'd only emphasize that NV Energy takes this subject matter very seriously, but we don't believe the petition will realize the environmental benefits for the residents of Nevada, and we don't believe it has the requisite statutory authority for this commission or any commission in Nevada to act, and I'll leave it there.
Questions from the commissioners?
Oh, sorry.
Okay, none. Thank you very much. Other members of the public wish to speak on this item?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Ray Bacon, Nevada Manufacturers Association. You've got our written comments. It's almost impossible to follow Alan. Alan and I have been working together for 30 years when we did one of the most aggressive cleanups that's ever taken place in this state, which I think he will confirm. Let me just add a couple of points. The petitioner's petition never mentions water vapor. And far and away, the last time I knew, the chemistry still says, you know, when you do combustion, you wind up with CO2 and water vapor. And I have to believe that water vapor is a large part of the whole climate change issue. And their petition never mentions that. Second, until you take carbon off the periodic chart, I don't think you can fundamentally change the chemistry enough to say that we're going to take carbon off the, you know, off the planet. If we want to do that, I'll say this only in jest, but we should start with a carbon-free zone called the Beltway in D.C. to start there for about a five-year test period, and then we can see what really makes a difference. And with that, I'll leave you with something to close out with a little jest.
We would endorse that last point.
Any other members from the public? Anyone in the audience? Okay, I see none. I am going to call staff to the podium. I want your viewpoint on this, especially from the standpoint of what we're doing or what this would entail if we would ask you to do this, and any recommendations that you can give us from a staff perspective.
For the record, Mike Elgis. Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that I could really add much beyond what you've heard. I can tell you we've invested a lot of time looking at the petition, and I think most of the comments that have been made, I would frankly be repeating. There's certainly, I think, from a procedural perspective, deficiencies in the petition that would have to be resolved, assuming we were to move through the rulemaking process. There was a lot of discussion about economics, the costs, cost to business and industry, cost to the agency, you know, those are big ticket items that through the rulemaking process that we're obligated to go through have to be identified and dealt with, to navigate through that process. Colleen's talked a fair bit about the executive orders that are in place, moratorium on fees. You start to put those pieces together, and I think there's some significant obstacles from a procedural perspective of getting through the process, if you will. There's been a fair bit of discussion about what's going on within the state from a greenhouse gas or climate change perspective. I would be repeating a lot of that as well. I think, you know, I'd be more than happy to go through this whole presentation if you'd like me to, but I'm just not sure that I could really add much. I think the way I would close, regardless, is that I think we've been pretty successful in the work that's been done so far statewide because we have approached this this issue more cautiously. You know, I talked a little bit earlier about some of the programs where we were out way in front on, and not to say that this would wind up in the same situation, but we put a lot of effort into a number of programs that just went away overnight. I think we've applied a bit of that strategy in working forward on this climate change and greenhouse gas issue, and I think that's served us well. So I think really the only recommendation that I would make that might be a little bit different is to proceed cautiously. I think that's worked well for us to date. I'd be happy to try to answer any specific questions, but like I said, I'm not sure I could add much more.
Questions from the commission?
Mike, would you agree that, you know, at some point, you know, when the lawsuits are settled, there's going to be federal actions from EPA and what states are required to do in reduction of greenhouse gases. And if we were to move ahead of that event, it could potentially delay more stringent requirements that would come down from EPA. Is that not correct?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think to that end, Tom, the EPA and the rulemaking that we discussed a little bit earlier, there was a lot of work and observation made that the cost, the levels at which should be regulated, there was a tremendous amount of work done, and I think EPA was pretty open in crafting a rule, admittedly saying, look, we got to kind of start somewhere, and we're not stopping there. I think they've been very, very upfront about that and saying, but we'll start here. We'll start with the low-hanging fruit. We'll address that first, and we're going to continue to march forward with more and additional regulations. I guess that kind of falls in my line of thinking that, you know, it's a stepwise process, and I think we ought to see how kind of the first step works. Our program, we've approached it that way, inventory, let's see what we have in Nevada, report from the big emitters. Now we're into rulemaking and permitting, and I think, yeah, we're going to continue to see that on. If you get out, if you start to get ahead of that a little bit too much, I think you're absolutely right. You can upset the apple cart to the point where it becomes a deficit, and I would be concerned about doing that as well.
Your questions? Thank you.
That's okay. Mr. Eldridge, what about Mr. Biaggi's point about not even having the statutory authority? Have you asked for an opinion from the DAG to see?
Actually, we have, and Alan and I, you know, we disagree a lot. This is one that, frankly, we couldn't find a particular prohibition on. I think it's questionable. You know, I think it's something that could be looked at a little more closely. And frankly, in the review that we did, we didn't really want to dwell on that. We figured we'd err on the side of, well, okay, if we were going to go down the path, what are the other pitfalls, if you will? And I think there's a lot of obstacles.
Thank you, Michael.
You bet.
Mr. Galpin, having been in front of us before, I can't imagine you don't want to come back and make some...
Thank you so much for the invitation.
Final comments.
I'd like to address some of the comments, if I may. First, I'm happy that NV Energy is so eager to get off coal, and we definitely want to express our public appreciation, and we will do everything that we can to help them do that. The duty under the public trust doctrine is well established. It's true that it hasn't been fully litigated in Nevada, but it's been recognized by the U.S. Supreme Court in Illinois Central, by the California Supreme Court in the Mono Lake case, by the state through state court decisions in Arizona, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, Hawaii, a number of other states. And in the Illinois case before the Supreme Court, they specifically mentioned that the atmosphere is part of the corpus of natural trust assets that governments are obliged to protect, so too in the California case. Now, with respect to statutory authority, we agree with the division that there is no specific prohibition. But I also cited to you, I don't have it now in my mind, but 445B something or other, that there is a statute that's specifically on point that grants plenty of authority to the State Environmental Commission to take those actions necessary to realize the full benefits of the Federal Clean Air Act, which expressly allows states to go further, and which further than the federal minimum, and which also indicates that the that traditional responsibility to protect the public health and welfare from air pollution resides not with the federal government, but with state and local governments. Which brings me to a point that was just recently addressed by the division. And I couldn't disagree more. State innovation in the area of climate change policy innovation and regulation has been the driver for the tepid federal response to date. If it weren't for a number of states' initiatives, we would have nothing at the federal level. Think, for example, of the Clean Cars Program. I litigated this in several courts in support of the states, led by California, which instituted stricter requirements for the first requirements for greenhouse gas emission controls from autos. That was litigated by industry, and the states prevailed. Following that, the federal government instituted essentially similar regulations to California's under the assumption that it's better to have a uniform national system than state-by-state systems. And we agree with that. It would be better to have a strong national system to cap and systematically reduce greenhouse gas emissions, but we don't have that. And in the absence of executive leadership, it's been states that have stepped into the breach, and that's what we're continuing to urge here. Now, it's true that under the new EPA, the new administration, they have begun to take steps towards regulating not only mobile sources but stationary sources. But there is no overarching attempt to say what do we need to do to get from here to there, to get from certain climate catastrophe under current business as usual to sustainability. And that's the sort of plan that is necessary to be done nationally in the absence of national action, state by state, jurisdiction by jurisdiction. I could touch on water vapor, but I won't. costs. The petition notes that it's impossible to fully cost out what might be done when we don't know exactly what would be in the plan. But there has been study after study at the national level, for example, by EPA, as to the national cost of the proposal that was before the House and then the Senate that was eventually defeated, comprehensive climate legislation. There are hundreds of pages of cost-benefit analysis that inform the International Panel on Climate the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's report from 2007 and 2009. There's study after study that shows what various types of initiatives would cost. Some of them actually show a realization of greater benefits to costs. And the important point here is that the costs of inaction will be overwhelming, almost unfathomable. And that is essentially what we have with respect to meaningful action to reduce emissions and concentrations in the atmosphere to date. So in sum, there's ample authority, both under the common law public trust doctrine, for the commission to take strong action now. There's ample statutory authority that would support such action. It would hold up in court. The crisis can't simply be wished away. And in the absence of true federal leadership on this issue, there's every reason for states to continue and to accelerate their efforts in this area. That's what we're asking you to do.
Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And who's the biggest emitter of CO2 in Nevada? Who's the bad guy? And what should we do about it? We could do one thing.
So sorry.
I like him a lot.
Not trying to cause a fist fight.
Look, one of the reasons why NV Energy is the largest emitter of CO2 is because they generate the most electricity. And they do so not only from non-carbon or low-carbon renewable resources, like Tom was indicating, and which I think NV Energy is seriously committed to increasing as part of their overall energy portfolio, but because there's still a very heavy reliance on fossil fuel generation. And it is true. For example, the Harry Allen plant, which is coming online, I think, this summer, is that correct? Will add an additional 500 megawatts to NV Energy's overall energy portfolio. That will be, I think that's a combined cycle natural gas plant, highly efficient. I think they're using fairly state-of-the-art technology in that. And as Tom indicated, that will have half the emissions on a kilowatt basis as their coal plant just up the road in Reed Gardner. What could be done? Well, the NV Energy could, and we hope will, expedite the retirement of their remaining coal-fired boilers. At Reed Gardner, there are four boilers. In total, I think it's generating about 550 megawatts on an annual basis. And that would be replaced on a kilowatt-by-kilowatt basis by the Harry Allen plant. Now, the truth is, this state is energy long, I think, is how they put it in the field. There is a glut, especially if you look at the ample supplies of natural gas, capacity to phase out the worst type of generation in this state and rely only on non-coal sources. There is also, I think, the opportunity to more fully exploit, in Southern California, example, Nevada's extraordinary solar resources. I represent, in addition to the Sierra Club in a number of these matters, the Moapa Band of Paiutes. It's a Native American tribe directly adjacent to the NV Energy Reed Gardner plant. They receive all the pollution, very little of the benefits. In fact, I don't even think NV Energy supplies their electricity there with a co-op in Overton. And they are suffering the direct results, not merely from the carbon dioxide pollution, but all the associated pollution that is released when we're burning coal. And they are trying to utilize, this is in southern Nevada, in Clark County, about 45 miles north of Las Vegas, excellent solar resources, some of the best in the country. They are attempting to utilize a portion of their land, reservation land, to create a new large-scale PV, photovoltaic solar array, and also concentrated solar project. And I would hope at some point that they could partner closely with NV Energy or other purchasers to fully develop the potential for large-scale solar resources. And then there's a tremendous, as Tom indicated, resources in northern Nevada, including geothermal and wind and so on, that could be more fully exploited. There is enough solar energy hitting the surface of the planet in 6 minutes to power the world for the entire year, were it efficiently captured. Similar estimates are of wind energy. We have barely begun to tap into the potential to be able to continue our lifestyles in reasonable opulence and, in fact, help the rest of the world develop to reasonable standards of living without destroying the climate system on which civilization has depended for the last 10,000 years.
So the short answer is coal-fired power.
So short answer is coal-fired power plant. Longer answer is we need to transition off of all fossil fuel generation and utilize renewable resources.
Since I'm the geothermal guy for the state, could you add geothermal right in here?
So you got it. You got it. No problem.
And then, since we should have more gas-fired plants, is what I hear you say.
I'm not actually saying that.
But it would be preferable to coal.
Yes.
I want you to come out in favor of hydraulic fracking for me as well.
I cannot do that, but I appreciate the opportunity, but I'm going to have to pass. Thank you. We should have a conversation between you and Joe Johnson from the Sierra Club, who's also a mining guy from way back.
But wouldn't you agree that Nevada is one of the leaders in natural resources of energy production and utilizing those compared to other states? I mean, we seem to be, in my opinion, doing our part and doing quite a bit, and it continues to move in a forward progress. As when I was with the division 30 years ago, that time the power companies were all coal generated and very few were gas. And we weren't even talking wind or geothermal, and now it's a new era, and I think we're moving in that direction.
Yes, I agree. that we're moving in that direction. The question is the speed of the movement, and if we have time to get there, pardon the pun, using our current glacial pace. We need to do more, and we need to do more quicker. Now, it is true that, well, first of all, the United States is not doing as well as a number of other nations in developing renewable technology. We have slipped way behind not only China, but Germany and Italy and France and the Scandinavian countries, which have serious programs to make the cost of renewable energy cost competitive with fossil fuel generation. And we have not done that yet in Nevada, even in California, not in New York. We don't have those kinds of programs. We could have those programs. It would take a little skill and a little commitment to have something like a feed-in tariff program like they have in other nations. There are models beyond what is being done in the United States that we could adopt in the United States. Now, it's true that Nevada, along with a number of other states, have adopted increasingly stringent renewable portfolio standards or renewable energy standards. They should be toughened. I think Nevada is for 25% by 2020. Do I have that right? 25% by 2020. That's good, but it's not nearly good enough. Those types of improvements could be made, but you would want to do it as part of an overall plan to get from where we are to where we need to be. And that's what the kids' petition is asking you to do. Do it rationally. Do it comprehensively, figure it out, and then report on a regular basis the success or not to the legislature and to the public so that requisite changes can be made. So I don't disagree. I think Nevada, like, for example, California and Oregon, few other states, are doing a lot better than they used to do. But we are in a crisis, and that requires us to act with sufficient deliberate speed to exercise our responsibilities here.
I misled you, Dan. 25%
by 2025. 25% by 2025.
Other questions? Mr. Belton, while he's up on the podium. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, well, it's time for the commission deliberations. Are there any discussion
Sure.
or comments?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Colleen Chris for the record. I was wondering if we could have our Deputy Attorney General, Jasmine Mehta, respond to the comments that were made on the public trust doctrine, because we did have her spend a bit of time
Sure.
doing that review. And I just wanted to make sure we had it on the record.
Good. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman and Commissioners. I just wanted to respond a little bit on the public trust doctrine, because I don't think it... I think that some clarification is needed with respect to the scope and the manner of its application. Mr. Galpern represented that in the Illinois Central case, which is one of the seminal U.S. Supreme Court cases, it's an 1892 case on the public trust doctrine, that they said that air was a public trust or held in the public trust as well as a California case. But I wanted to be clear that those cases... and almost all of the cases that you'll find in the entire United States have limited the application of the public trust doctrine to navigable waters and the soils underneath those waters. It has not been expanded by any state in this nation to air. And this would be an unprecedented application of the public trust doctrine if you were to go down that path. The other point that I want to make with respect to the public trust doctrine is that it is a judicial tool. It is a limitation on the legislature's ability to convey away navigable waters and the soils underneath those waters. And it has only been used by the judiciary. It is not a source of the state's police power, which enables the state to enact laws for the health and safety and welfare of its citizens. So it is not, as has been represented in the petition and by Mr. Galpern, it is not a source, an enabling authority for the commission to enact the rules as set forth in the petition. So I just wanted to clarify those two points with respect to the public trust doctrine. Are there any questions?
But if the commission so decided, under this particular petition, it could still direct staff to go ahead with rulemaking.
My understanding, and your counsel certainly may have a different understanding, is that you would be able to either deny the petition or direct DEP to go forward with the rulemaking process.
Question. Thank you.
Thank you.
The commission should have comments or deliberation on the item. Any comments you want to put on the record? We have a motion then.
Can I say something before you make the motion?
Sure.
Just to clarify for the record, what the commission is doing here is pursuant to NRS 233B.100, which states that upon submission of a petition to adopt regulations, which is what is happening here, the agency shall within 30 days either deny the petition in writing, stating its reasons, or initiate regulation-making proceedings. So I want that particular direction to inform the commission's deliberations, because if you, in your discussions, you need to give reasons for what you are doing. It is not enough just to simply state, you know, approve or deny. You need to include reasons.
Any commission questions on for Rosemarie on that? Tom?
Well, having listened to those comments, I mean, in my opinion, the specific one of the most poignant reasons here is the missing aspect of the cost associated moving down this path. And I think it's quite clear our requirements are to consider those when we're considering any petition on business and industry, and that is lacking specificity here. I mean, we've got generalizations about what it costs, you know, obviously, you know, the nation and the globe, but I think it has to be specific to Nevada and Nevada industries. And it's in every petition application that we have and we consider. And it's missing here, in my opinion.
I would also add to that that to do this, in my opinion, getting down this road for the same reasons you're talking about, I have a fear, I guess is the best way to put it, that we probably can't get past the governor's executive order with this particular rulemaking. I'm just, that's not an opinion, it's not legal or anything else, but I have a little insight to what the government was trying to accomplish with that executive order economically, and it folds right into what you're saying, Tom.
I would also note that the staff has shared that there's a concern that we would get out ahead of what could be coming down the road federally further on, and that could cause more difficulties in then dealing with those issues down the road. So as an additional negative.
Chairman, I'd also share that I think the petition lacks the science to support its conclusions and recommendations. So until I see more detail and an analysis from a scientific basis, I don't see the validity.
And Pete, would you agree then the science would have to be specific to Nevada?
Yes,
and
I would.
And the impact to the resources and the industry here. Yeah,
that's what I'm trying to say.
Other comments? Alan, I can't believe you're giving up this opportunity.
No, those are great conditions to attach for reason for denial, so I'll move to deny, and I'll ask to be for the reasons that were stated by Mr. Porta.
I'd second that.
And Mr. Barbee and Mr. Anderson, those three reasons.
Okay. A motion and a second. Reed, does that fulfill your concern?
Yes.
Okay. And made a motion and seconded that this petition be denied in writing with those particular reasons. And although, unless you want to discuss this further, the motion itself, I'll ask for a vote. All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None? Thank you. We have, two other items, but I think, Colleen, you've already had item number six at the beginning of our meeting. And the last item, number seven, is public comment. This is the time at the end of the meeting where we would invite any public comments from the audience on any items. I would ask you to restrict your comments to 5 or 10 minutes or less. Seeing none, John, our next meeting is?
October 5th.
October 5th.
October 5th.
Okay, probably the same venue.
Probably.
Okay. I was going to say.
Okay, with that.
October is a national holiday the whole week, all month. Well, that's right. The hunting season opens up.
Okay, the meeting's adjourned.